Patience is in order for Desmond Ridder, but maybe there's some hope for the future. At least so says SB Nation's Mark Schofield. We'll talk to him about his impressions of Desmond Ridder's debut, as well as pick his brain about the upcoming 2023 quarterback class to see which guy stands out from the bunch here on today's Locked On Falcons.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
So you guys know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, a.k.a. Sirius Black, a.k.a. Mr. Drew, and a.k.a. your very humble host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Sports Atlanta podcast family, your team every day. And today's episode is brought to you by Ultimate Football GM. If you've ever dreamed of becoming an NFL GM and managing your own football franchise, this is the game definitely for you. To download the game, just visit ultimate-gm.com or look it up in the app stores. Our listeners will get a 100% free boost to their franchise when using the promo code Locked On, all caps, in the game store. So guys, I want to thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen. Of course, it's free and available Monday through Friday on a variety of podcast platforms, including YouTube. Make sure you subscribe to Locked On Falcons on YouTube, and you will get the video version of the podcast the night before the audio drops. And of course, Locked On Falcons, like all Locked On Sports Atlanta shows, is also available on Roku and Amazon Fire TV. All you got to do is download the Locked On Sports Atlanta app if you have Roku and Amazon Fire TV. So guys, we're going to be joined later by Mark Schofield of SB Nation. We're going to talk about his impressions of Desmond Ridder's debut, talk a little bit about the highs and the lows instead of our typical all 22 review, but I will do my best, if you're checking this out on YouTube, to link to some of the plays that Mark is discussing in this episode in the comments below. And you can find that on my Twitter at @FalcFans. As far as, you know, the typical all 22 Q&A stuff, we might punt that till a little bit later in the week. Maybe we do a bonus episode over the weekend, something along those lines, to answer some of your guys' questions, because I know you guys are curious on that. But without further ado, let's get into the conversation with Mark Schofield about Desmond Ridder's debut, as well as later we'll be turning our attention to the upcoming 2023 quarterback class to sort of see, you know, if the cream potentially rises to the top as we move forward with Mark Schofield of SB Nation on today's Locked On Falcons. Welcome back, everyone, to another illustrious episode of the Locked On Falcons podcast, and I am joined by an illustrious guest. He is Mark Schofield of SB Nation. Mark has been a frequent guest on this podcast over the last two off seasons to talk with us about each quarterback class. We last had Mark on after this past year's draft to talk specifically about Desmond Ridder. And at the end of the episode, we joked that if we have Mark back on the podcast, he is a harbinger of doom, because it means that we are looking ahead to the 2023 quarterback class. That is something that we will touch upon on today's episode, but it's much later than I think a lot of people thought. We thought, you know, maybe Mark will be back in September, October with the Falcons, but now we're in December and we're going to be talking all about Desmond Ridder's first start. And maybe, just maybe, we'll see, Mark maybe not be that harbinger of doom and we come away with positive feelings about Desmond Ridder's debut. But Mark, my friend, welcome back to the show.
Aaron, it is fantastic to be here. And like you said, I'm not quite the harbinger of doom that we first saw I could be. I mean, if this was right around Halloween time and we were doing this, then yeah, it's doom time. But we're just a couple of days before Christmas now, and we are going to talk about Desmond Ridder. We are going to talk about the 2023 quarterback class, which, as we'll get into, has taken on a bit of a turn over the past couple of weeks, which has been fascinating to see. But it's always fun to be here. I'm excited to dive in. We got a Desmond Ridder debut that, you know, you and I had sort of planned, like, okay, he might start week 15. Why don't we schedule a show after that to see if it happens? And that's indeed what came to fruition. So we get to dive into it.
Absolutely. So you wrote a piece for SB Nation last week. I'll link to it in the description below. And basically the main takeaways that you seem to have was, you kind of stress patience with Desmond Ridder, But you also stress that, you know, there's signs of hope for the future. Obviously, you wrote this piece before we actually saw him on the field on Sunday against New Orleans Saints. Did his first start live up to those expectations based off of what you wrote before?
I think in a way they did, because like you said, the framework of that piece was patience, but there might be reasons for hope. And I think, you know, after watching that game, studying it, rewatching it earlier this week, I think, yes, patience is kind of key, because like we sort of talked about before the show began, there were moments when he looked like a rookie quarterback making his first start. I mean, there were a lot of moments where he looked like that. But there were also some moments where you could see him sort of get into the flow of the game, which I think is sort of something that we saw from him at Cincinnati. One of the knocks on him coming out was he inaccurate, missing throws. And you could see him over the course of games at Cincinnati sort of settle into games and start hitting throws second quarter, third quarter. And we talked about him pre-draft, post-draft. That was going to be something to watch. Would he start to settle into some throws? And I think you saw that over the course of this game against New Orleans. You also saw what I would call some good no-throw decisions. You know, this is a defense that has given Tom Brady some problems, that has given some other quarterbacks some problems this year. I think Pete Werner and Tyrann Mathieu had some moments where a less experienced quarterback, you know, a quarterback sort of that didn't have the experience in college that Desmond Ridder had, might have thrown some interceptions. I mean, there were some moments where he's starting to let it go, and he's like, oh, there's that flash of color. There's Pete Werner jumping a route underneath. There's Tyrann Mathieu diving on a route, where he sort of then resets and pulls it down. And what I want to see him do, because in a lot of those moments, he pulled it down and ran. I want to see him pull it down and get to two, get to three. There were times when, you know, there was a play in the second half where he wants to throw an in cut. I think it's Werner or Math, one of those two jumps it and he pulls it down and runs. I'd like to see him pull it down, get to the tight end in the flat, get to that second or third read. That's something I'm going to be watching in the week sort of going forward. You know, but I think ultimately it sort of lined up with my expectations, which was there's going to be some bumps. You're going to need to have some patience. But there are also those glimmers where it's like, yeah, the light's kind of there. Like he knows what he's supposed to be doing. He's avoided some critical mistakes. Now the next question is, okay, you avoided the mistakes. That's nice. Get to option two. Get to option three. Don't let your legs be plan B on so many snaps.
Yeah. And I think it's interesting you brought up the thing that we discussed pre and post draft, where the tendency that Ridder had to get off to these rocky starts. And he talked about this in his post game presser, that he was a little amped up. He was trying to be perfect a little bit, maybe pressing a little bit. And basically when I went back and watched the all 22, I basically threw out those first two series where he went 0-for-4. Cause it was clearly like he was off looking like a rookie, you know, the lights being too big. But one of the things that we noted throughout his time at Cincinnati, you also saw this in the preseason as well, that even when he got off to some rocky starts, he seemed to settle in. And that was one of the things we talked about 6 months ago when you were on the pod talking about his ability to respond to adversity. And I think we saw that on Sunday. So I'm curious, you know, what were your thoughts in, you know, you already expressed some of them, but what were your thoughts on that notion that you saw on Sunday?
Yeah. I mean, I honestly feel like his best throw might've been the fumble near the end of the game from Drake London, right? And what I loved about that play was he threw London open in the secondary window, because it's an in-breaking sort of slant type route. And you initially look at it, he's like, he's going to pull it. No, he's got a good feel for that underneath defender. So he throws him open in that secondary window, which I really like to see from him. And I think it's an example of the game sort of coming to him sort of settling in. And in a moment where, you know, Atlanta's potentially going to drive down and take the lead, like, to make a throw like that, I thought was impressive. And there were some throws and decisions early in the game where it's like his first throw of the day, it's like, I'm throwing this nine route. Like, I get to the line of scrimmage, I've got this nine route, I'm throwing it. There were some other throws, like the orbit motion down near the goal line that could have been a pick six. It's like, you've got this play called, I want to throw this, I'm throwing this no matter what. I think those types of plays and moments where he almost got burned or he threw an incompletion made him realize, like, look, I just sort of gather myself here and make some reads. I can't just assume that stuff's going to be open. And you saw that sort of develop as well. And so I think he did show over the course of this game that he was going to let the game come to him, that he sort of settled in, that he started, you know, not just locking on to things. He was going to read some stuff out. He was going to show, you know, that feel for coverage, particularly underneath coverage, that you need to have to excel in the NFL. And so I thought that aspect to his performance was impressive. You know, there are things that he's got to figure out in terms of not locking onto targets. There were a number of times, like the first play of the second half, right? The boot action where he's got London working across the field and he stares at it and he stares at it and he stares at it. And then he finally lets it go. And it's initially intercepted on the field. The call got overturned, but it's like, you got to throw it. Like there were a number of times where he'd either lock onto something and wouldn't throw it right away. Or there were even double and triple clutch moments where it's like here, here, here. And then he finally throws it. And if you're clutching three times, like there was one play where he's got a smack a corner out along the left sideline and he like triple clutches it. And all the safety is doing is reading his eyes and he jumps it. Like he's got to clean that stuff up. But yeah, he got into the flow of this game pretty well. And I thought that was very impressive. It's all about what do we see this week, right? What do we see from start one to start two? It's similar in a sense to say senior bowl practice where, you know, the first senior bowl practice Tuesday of senior bowl week, it's your baseline day. Okay, this is what they've done. Now let's see the growth from here, even the course of one day to the next. For Ritter, it's okay, this is what he did in his first start. Now let's see the growth from start one to start two.
Yeah, I think so. And I'll link to some of those clips that those specific plays and throws that Mark is discussing in the comments below. And I'll put those up on Twitter. Some of them was already up on my Twitter at FalcFans. We'll move the conversation forward, talking a little bit more about some of the things that we want to see from Desmond Ritter over these next three games, as well as move the conversation towards the quarterbacks potentially available at the top of the 2023 NFL draft here with Mark Schofield of SB Nation. So guys, as we continue today's episode, I want to tell you about our sponsor, the mobile game Ultimate Football GM. If you've ever dreamed of becoming an NFL GM or managing your own football franchise, well, your dream can finally come true, and this is definitely the game for you. You can manage every strategic aspect of your team, play through a season, and lead your team to glory. You're hiring coaches, coordinators, trading players, drafting players, signing free agents. The challenges are realistic and they're great. I remember during my first season, you know, supposed to rebuilding, and I'm promising the owner that we'll be a lot more competitive. We don't need to rebuild. And then after a 2-1 start, I watch my beloved Atlanta Falcons lose 11 straight games. And so if you want to sit here and prove that you're more knowledgeable about team building than myself or your friends, make sure you check out Ultimate Football GM, and you're going to get a 100% free boost to your franchise with the promo code Locked On. That's Locked On in all caps. If you use it in the game store to download the game, all you got to do is visit ultimate-gm.com or look it up in the app store. That's ultimate-gm.com. Ultimate Football GM. Start your dynasty today. And today's episode is also brought to you by Audible. Audible is releasing a new slate of football podcasts that we're sure you're going to love. You can check out the episode of The League available as a bonus episode right now on Locked On NFL. It's narrated by Super Bowl champion Richard Sherman and sports broadcaster Taylor Rooks. The League is an 8-part docuseries about the most bizarre, inspirational, and untold stories connected to America's favorite sport spanning from the 1940s through the present. Each story offers equal parts history, entertainment, and social commentary. The bonus episode is called The Way of the Cowboy, and it's an incredible story of how the 1977 Dallas Cowboys brought in Bruce Lee's protege to teach their defense martial arts, ushering a brand new approach to how the league trained. Head over to Locked On NFL for that bonus episode of The League, or you can catch the full series for free on Audible or wherever you get your podcasts. Audible, get in the game. So, guys, we thank you for making Locked On Falcons your first listen each and every day. And for your second listen, of course, check out the Locked On Sports Today podcast. Go beyond the scoreboard, behind the scenes with the local experts and insights that only Locked On can provide by subscribing to Locked On Sports Today on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. So, Mark, I'm curious to get, you know, any other takeaways you have from Ritter's first game. Are there things, specific things that you're looking for from him in these final three games? One of the things that we've briefly discussed on here on Locked On Falcons over the last couple of weeks is, you know, upcoming games against Baltimore on the road, Arizona, you got Tampa Bay to close out the season. These are teams that are probably going to bring a lot more pressure than he saw on Sunday against the New Orleans Saints. And I'm curious, what are some of the things that, if that is, proves to be true, what are some of the things that you're looking for from him, moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, I think what's kind of interesting looking back through my notes from what we saw against the Saints, you know, he did a good job at standing in, you know, when there were moments when he had multiple points of pressure and there was really no escape route. He did a good job at sort of standing in and making a throw. Now, sometimes that throw wasn't completed. Sometimes the placement of it was off. But I like to see that, particularly when you're going up against some defenses that like to bring pressure, that will bring multiple points of pressure, that might bring some simulated pressure looks where, you know, you've got those mugged up linebackers and they come off the edges instead. And now you can't really escape and you've got to hand in there. And that's something to watch with some of these defenses they're going to face. I thought he did a good job at times against the Saints when you saw those mugged looks and then linebackers drop off and you've got to read that out. And in fact, the London play at the end of the game, I believe, was one of those sort of mugged looks where, you know, you've got to fit that into the secondary window around a linebacker who's shown pressure and now dropped off. To see that, to read that, to throw around that, I thought was a very good sign from Ridder. So I liked that from him, but it's the idea of your legs can't always be plan B. You know, that's something I really want to see from him because he's a good athlete. You know, we saw that at Cincinnati. We saw that at the combine. Now this is Sunday football, right? You know, I guess Saturday football because we get Saturday games this week. But the athletes on the other side are pretty good. You know, this isn't group of five football. Now you're at the NFL level where the guys can match your speed. They can match your 4 or 5 athleticism. So you've got to be able to, okay, if you can't make that first throw because of something or you've got pressure, step around it. The small, subtle pocket movement where instead of, you know, moving to run as your plan B, you're moving to throw to your plan B. Like, that's what I want to see him do next. Even in those moments where there's no pressure and you can't make that first read, get to the second read, you know, get to the third read. Like, that's where I want to see him go next. And that's something that I'm really going to be watching over these next couple of weeks is he creating space to get to option B in the passing game as a receiver, as a target downfield, or is he still sort of created space and time to get to plan B, which is him as a runner?
Yeah. Yeah. Great points there. So we'll see what comes of Desmond Ridder, but we'll just move the conversation towards the upcoming quarterback class. And one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is sort of, you know, particularly from this last offseason where the narrative was, hey, you know, this 2022 quarterback class is not a great class. If you want a quarterback, wait till next year. And based off of where teams were drafting quarterbacks this past year, it does feel like the NFL generally agreed with that consensus. But I know for me personally, when I actually started looking more at, you know, particularly Bryce Young and CJ Stroud's 2021 film over the summer, I came away a little bit underwhelmed with those guys, given some of the hype that we had been hearing all offseason. And now it's interesting because I think now over the last couple of weeks, and I don't know if this was something that you were intimating earlier in today's episode, but it does feel like now the narrative is shifting. Oh, well, you know, the 2023 class is fine, but hey, you know, that 2024 class is going to be even better. Although I think this is just kind of the way it works in this business, where next year is always, the grass is always greener in that sense. But, you know, I know you're early in the process, but sort of what are your thoughts on sort of your general thoughts on this upcoming quarterback class?
We do this every year. We do this every single year. I mean, I wrote it at Inside the Pylon years ago when we were with the Watson, Mahomes, Trubisky class. But the conversation at the combine was Sam Darnold for next year. You know, we do this every year where we build up a quarterback class in, say, you know, April, May, June, July. And then they play and we start picking at them, right? You know, this isn't good. This isn't good. These throws weren't good. And then we start to see other guys. In that year, it was Darnold, it was Rosen, it was Mayfield, it was even Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson. Like, okay, Mahomes, Trubisky, Watson. No, if you need a quarterback, wait a year because those guys are going to be great. You know, we're doing it now. You know, we spent last season saying, hey, you know, this quarterback class isn't great, but next year you're going to get Bryce Young, you're going to get CJ Stroud. Will Levis is getting some excitement. Anthony Richardson could put it together. And now here we are. It's a couple days before Christmas, and it's, man, Caleb Williams is special. Like, Caleb Williams is going to be, you know, you're going to pack it in for Caleb or whatever catchphrase you want to use, because he's special. Michael Penix Jr. is fantastic. Bo Nix is going back. Maybe he's kind of put it together. We do this every cycle. Now, I think there's reasons why we do it. There are valid concerns and criticisms about Stroud, Young, Levis, Richardson that we can raise. But we don't know what Caleb Williams is going to do over the next couple of months. We don't know what Michael Penix Jr. is going to do. I don't think Drake May is going to be eligible, but, you know, we start to look ahead and say, oh, you know, these next guys, you know, next year or the year after are going to be the answer for a quarterback needed franchise. Development isn't linear. You know, we expect it, part of it is that idea is in the back of our minds that if Caleb Williams is this good now, imagine how good he's going to be after another year. Or if Drake May is this good now, imagine. It's not a nice little neat little like line. It doesn't always work that way. Just think about, you know, if you're listening to the show, wherever you are in life, think about what you were at 21 and where you were at 22. You know, maybe it was that nice little tidy line. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe you had some bumps along the way. It's like that for these young quarterbacks. And so, you know, I'm certainly personally excited about where Caleb Williams is going to go. I'm so excited about what we're going to see from Penix and, you know, some of these other quarterbacks. But I also think that, look, there are things to like about Stroud. There are things to like about Young. There are things to like about Richardson. There are even things to like about Levis, who I'm not as high on as consensus, you know, or at least the NFL inside community seems to be. There are reasons to be excited about these players, and don't get caught in this idea that, oh, Caleb Williams is this now. He's going to be this and more next year. It might not work out that way. So if you're a quarterback needy team, I think you have to sit down and take a real hard look at these guys, because there are things to like. There are things that they do well. It's just a matter of, do you like them enough to go all in on them or to go in on them this year, or are you really going to sort of kick it down the can another year?
Yeah, yeah. That conversation is a whole podcast in and of itself.
It's like an hour long, like, you know, hardcore history kind of podcast. I mean, as you can tell, you tee me up with that question and I could probably talk. It's like that, you know, meme you see floating around every once in a while on Twitter. Like, if you had to talk for 30 minutes about a topic without any preparation, what would you talk about? For me, it's the idea of like quarterback development, and that the next year's class is always better because I could just wind me up and let me go.
Yeah, I definitely have some thoughts on it as well, but we'll leave that aside. And let's talk a little bit about this quarterback class. You know, looking at some of the top four guys like Bryce Young and CJ Stroud, Levis, Anthony Richardson, as you mentioned, and let's compare them. You know, I know you're not necessarily neck deep in this class yet, but if you could, how would you sort of stack that group of four against some of these last couple of drafts, say the 2019 draft that had Kyler Murray and Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins and Drew Lock, the 2020 class that had Burrow and Tua and Herbert and Jordan Love and Jalen Hurts, or 2021 with Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance, Justin Fields, Mac Jones, or this past year with Pickett and Ridder, Willis, Corral, and of course, everybody loves Brock Purdy as well. Where would you stack, you know, this 2023 class in comparison with some of those classes?
Yeah, I mean, I almost get like a 20, you didn't mention, but like 2018. I almost get like a 2018 vibe because, you know, we have two quarterbacks in this group that are going to get the Josh Allen comparison. You know, Levis and Richardson are going to sort of get that comparison because the traits are there, the athleticism, the big arm, like all of that stuff is there. And the argument that will be made by the fan bases and even the teams that draft one of those guys is, well, look at Josh Allen, look at his growth. We can do that. So I think there's that aspect to it. And there's also sort of like there was back in 18, there wasn't really a consensus about who was going to go first. I mean, if you think back to, you know, say the Senior Bowl when Mayfield went down there and basically said, I'm the best quarterback here, but there was still excitement about Darnold. There was, you know, Lamar and, you know, what he did. Like, there was a lot of question over who was going to be the first guy off the board. And I think there's that element at work here too, because at the start of the season, look, it was Bryce Young, it was CJ Stroud. Like, it was 1A, 1B. That's how it was in my mind. That's how it was for a lot of people. Now it's, hey, you know, Will Levis is the guy in NFL circles that everybody is pointing to. And you're hearing, you know, the glowing reviews of coaches are going to want him to date his daughter and all of that stuff. There are questions there are questions, you know, about Will Levis on the field. Is a team going to be able to get the sort of development out of him that you know, is necessary? Is, you know, when you look back at Stroud, are the losses to Michigan, what are we going to see from him against Georgia? Like, there's another opportunity for him to sort of say, no, I'm still that guy. Maybe that doesn't come to fruition. What happens if Stroud throws three picks against Georgia, which he might? That's a very good defense. Like, what does that do? Bryce Young's going to face a lot of questions about his size. Like, are you going to draft a quarterback first overall that's built like a slot receiver from the like early 2000s? Like, is a team going to do that? Now, I think the conversation about quarterback size has shifted over the years, so it's a distinct possibility. A team's going to be perfectly fine doing it. Maybe not. And so I it gives me that sort of 18 vibe because there are questions. There are like Josh Allen comparisons that are going to come. But ultimately, look, we've got four guys that I think could go in the first round. You might even see somebody else sneak in. I mean, I always get the injury, but Hendon Hooker, you know, I was impressed by a lot of what he did, but he's going to face questions about age, injury, and a very quarterback-friendly offense. So maybe he doesn't sneak in. There are some other names to sort of talk about as well, but I get that sort of 18 vibe from this group.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's definitely fair. Let's get a little bit more into each of these prospects. You've already touched upon some of the sort of narratives around these guys, but we'll give you the floor, Mark, coming up on today's Locked On Falcons to basically do like a 90-second to 2-minute pitch on each guy. If you're trying to sell these guys, at least preliminarily at this point in time in the calendar year, trying to sell these guys to whatever team winds up drafting them, sort of give that sell job, and we'll put you on the clock for that as we continue today's Locked On Falcons. This holiday, find what you love at Total Wine & More. With so many great bottles to choose from, it's easy to find your new favorite single barrel bourbon or that new Chardonnay, or find the perfect gifts for everyone on your list with some help from a friendly guide, and all with the confidence of knowing that you found something special for the lowest price. You'll love what you find only at Total Wine & More. Curbside pickup and delivery is available in most areas. Visit TotalWine.com to learn more. Drink responsibly. Be 21. So wrapping up today's episode here with Mark Schofield of SB Nation, we talked about kind of, you know, we'll see how things shake out with this class. Still, you know, a ways to go before we get to April. But seems like the consensus at this point in time is that there's four guys at the top of the draft board. That's Bryce Young of Alabama, CJ Stroud of Ohio State, Will Levis of Kentucky, Anthony Richardson of Florida. You know, for each one of these guys, Mark, you know, I'll put you on the clock, you know, give your sort of 90-second pitch on sort of what the general thoughts are on this quarterback and sort of what the thing that he brings to the table if you're selling him to an NFL franchise and fan base.
Yeah, let's start with CJ Stroud. I love CJ Stroud from when he's in rhythm. Like, when he's in rhythm, he's a great timing and rhythm thrower. He had, you know, a good rhythm throw early against Michigan on a deep ball in the second quarter where, you know, he shows you the touch you want in the vertical passing game, uses his eyes extremely well, can move safeties with his eyes. Again, Maryland, he opened the game with another beautiful rhythm throw. I just love when he's sort of in rhythm, in the flow of the offense. He had a great read against the blitz in that Maryland game where he showed you a good job of, you know, how you replace the blitz with the ball. He does that extremely well. He can work full field progression reads. He's got a slot fade concept against Maryland where he opens to the right, sees a slot fade, doesn't like it, comes to the left side, and he can still make timing and rhythm throws working through multiple progressions. I think what's become interesting is there's a comparison floating around that you can almost sort of see. It's that he's Jared Goff. Is that, you know, when things are clicking, when he's in rhythm, that's where he's at his best. When he has to sort of go outside of that and sort of color outside the lines, it's when things sort of start to break down. When he's pressured, that's when things sort of start to break down, which is kind of the Goff archetype. And I think that comparison has some merit to it. And so it becomes, you know, Goff went first overall, but would you draft Jared Goff first overall knowing what you know right now? Maybe you would, maybe you wouldn't. So that's kind of a quick look at Stroud. What I love about Young, it's that he's beaten some very good defenses. I think that matters. And not the QB wins component, just the ability to break down teams like Georgia a year ago in that SEC championship game where if they had a slip up in the secondary, if they had a bust in the secondary, he was going to make you pay. He was going to punish you with that. He's extremely calm in the pocket. You watch him against Auburn this year, it's collapsing around him. And like we were just talking about with Ritter, he can just create space with his feet. It's not a, I'm going to move to run. It's I'm going to move to throw. I'm going to create space like a boxer. I use that analogy a ton. Just use your feet, create space to get off a throw. Use your feet, create space to get off a punch. He does that extremely well. Eyes, process, and working through reads, does that extremely, extremely well. Calm and quiet in the pocket. I just love that about him. You know, I've seen some arm strength criticism. I don't quite see that. Like, I think the arm is good enough. I wouldn't say it's like an overwhelmingly plus-plus arm, but he's got more than enough to work in an NFL offense. And so, you know, I'm very intrigued by him. I know there's the Drew Brees comparison floater out there. Daniel Jeremiah has used that. I can kind of see that from the – it's the size, the processing, the footwork in the pocket. I can certainly see that. You know, Levis, here we go, right? Like, I get why NFL teams sort of like him. I get why he might be the guy that goes first of this group. I don't think, again, I'm not done, but I don't think I'm going to have him there. But look, the arm is great. You know, he can throw the deep ball extremely well. He's confident. He's aggressive. Like, he doesn't play with fear, and that matters at the position. You know, he's got a quick, snappy throw in motion, both on RPO stuff and even deeper stuff downfield. Where do I have problems with him? He's late. He's late on a lot of reads. He's late on a lot of throws. He gets himself into trouble, and it's that Josh Allen prototype of he thinks the arm will bail him out, and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. That's Saturday football. What's it look like in the Sunday game? Richardson might be the one that honestly intrigues me the most, and you hear that, oh, he's a year away, he's 2 years away, he's going to need a lot of work. I don't know about that. I think he might be closer, at least from what I've seen already in my, you know, preliminary work on him. He might be closer than I think he's getting credit for. One of my favorite throws from any of these guys was the touchdown against Florida State, where moving the safety with his eyes, come back, hit the seam route on time in rhythm with an absolute rocket of a throw. An extremely impressive play from Richardson. And you add in the athleticism, the power. I mean, that pile move and run against Florida State. It was one of those moments where you're sitting there, you're watching the game, you just like make a little mental note or an actual physical note, because I'm still a pen and paper guy. Like, yeah, rewatch this because there's something here. You watch him against Vanderbilt. You watch his eyes. You watch, you know, fourth and seven, he's got a nine ball that he puts in a perfect spot early in that game. Fourth quarter, he's got a free runner in his face and he just drops an absolute dime. I'm not fully there yet, but he's somebody I'm really warming up to as I keep working through this quarterback class.
Yeah, I recently watched him and Levis, and I came away feeling much better about Richardson. There's certainly some accuracy concerns that I think are definitely serious because, you know, scattershot is probably the kindest way you could describe it. But, you know, in recent years, it used to be sort of the narrative with accuracy was he can't fix it. And it does feel like we've had a lot more players seemingly outliers in that regard the last couple of years. And so, you know, I think a lot, whether you like Richardson kind of depends on what you kind of feel about that accuracy issue and whether or not it's something that can be fixed. And again, I'm not an expert. I know you are a little bit better in depth in this sort of stuff, but for me, at least my sort of amateur eye, you know, I do think some of it may be mechanic issues that you could potentially fix with him.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think, look, we've seen, you know, maybe Josh Allen is one of one, but like Allen didn't have a completion percentage above 60, you know, even dating back to high school. And you've seen him fix that. You've seen, you know, Ritter's another one. Like we talked about him, like from his junior year to his senior year, like you saw an improvement in not just completion percentage, but like ball placement, like putting the throw to where it needs to be based on leverage and coverage and things like that and route concept. And so I've certainly warmed up to a quarterback being able to like fix some accuracy and ball placement issues, even in the NFL, whether it's working with a trainer and some mechanical stuff, whether it's, you know, understand the route concepts and coverages a little bit better. So you know where to put throws. So I, you know, when I first started out doing this, it was like, no. If you're inaccurate in college, you're never going to fix it. I think you can fix it. It's just how well do you trust the person himself to do the work? How well do you trust the people you have in the building to help him get to where he needs to be?
Absolutely. So, you know, with all these guys, you know, it's going to be a developmental issue. They all have flaws, and I think this goes back to the conversation we had earlier about why the grass always seems greener, that, you know, with the following class, because I think usually people don't put these guys under the eye that they typically do for a quarterback that is draft eligible.
Yeah. I mean, look, let's just say it right now. This time next year, I can guarantee there's going to be is Caleb Williams too skittish in the pocket conversation floating around? Because right now it's like, man, if he doesn't like that first or second read, like, he can make some special things happen, and we love it right now. But I guarantee at some point the conversation is going to – the winds will shift to, does he have the pocket presence necessary to play in the National Football League? Now, that's not me saying it. I'm just saying that conversation's coming, friends.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I look forward to having that conversation with you next year, buddy. Mark. But I'm sure we'll have some more conversations this offseason as we get further along in this process, looking at some of the quarterbacks, looking at, say, maybe other guys that could potentially be in the conversation. You mentioned Hendon Hooker as a guy that could be in the mix along with the four guys that we discussed. This I sort of see as part one of probably a 3 or 4 part series over the next 4 months that we have here with Mark Schofield. But guys, in the meantime, check out Mark's work over at SB Nation. In addition to football, he's writing about the World Cup. He's writing about, you know, car racing, all that stuff and more. Mark, go ahead and plug where people can find your work and what you got coming down the pipe over the next couple of weeks.
Well, Aaron, always a blast coming on. I look forward to the next 3, 4, how many ever conversations we have. It's going to be a ton of fun this year. Like you said, look, they're cutting me loose. They let me write about Formula One. They let me write about the World Cup. They let me write about hockey, baseball. I'm going to log off here. We're going to write about our favorite video games of 2022. I mean, you know, I don't know if it's a good business move or not, but I'm sure it's enjoying it. So check it out, SBNation.com. At Mark Schofield on Twitter. You know, check out the work that my buddy JP Acosta is doing. He and I collaborated on a piece about what in the world the Patriots were thinking at the end of that game against the Raiders. I think I blacked out twice while writing it. So you can check that out as well. But Aaron, my friend, always a blast.
Really appreciate it, Mark. Look forward to our next conversation, probably around combine time. I think we'll probably.
Sounds good, my friend.
All right, man. Have a good one.
You too.
So, guys, that's going to do it for us here on today's Locked On Falcons. Appreciate Mark Schofield for joining us. Tomorrow's episode will be a crossover Thursday where I will be joined by Locked On Ravens host Kevin Ostreicher to preview this Saturday matchup ahead of the game. So now realizing, okay, yeah, if we're going to do a bonus episode, you know, we'll maybe do something special on Saturday. So we'll see what happens, guys, later in the week. But if you want to submit questions and provide your feedback and tell me, hey, Aaron, I would love to have a bonus Saturday episode, by all means, hit me up in a comment below. You can send an email to LockedOnFalcons@mail.com. Of course, you can hit me up on social media at LockedOnFalcons on both Facebook and Twitter, or you can hit me up in the Discord link in the description below. So, guys, really appreciate it. We'll be back tomorrow with more Locked On Falcons content previewing this Week 16 matchup. Appreciate it, guys.